Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To our new listeners, welcome. To our old listeners, welcome back. Another episode of Magical Education awaits you, but first we would like to say a few words.
Nitwit, blubber, oddment, tweak. Podcast 9¾ topic of the week is Australian Magical School.
Hello listeners, I'm Rhea.
And I'm Jem, and today we're finally doing it. We're talking about the Australian Magical School. This will be the last episode in our Australian Magical series and is the culmination of everything we've just talked about in the last three episodes covering land, history and culture.
And also in a way the culmination of 6 years of doing this podcast.
Yeah.
This is like... we're going to have one more official episode, which is our wrap-up episode, but we're not learning anything new in that episode. It's just talking about the show and, like, everything that we've done over the course of it and, you know, how deeply grateful we are to all of our listeners. This is our last, like, actual content episode.
Yeah. Wow.
We're here. We've done it.
I know. We've reached the summit. And I think it's funny because, like, this is the sort of thing that we talked about for years, the Australian Magical School, how it would look, what it would be like. And the sort of things that we talked about when we were little kids, just we've come up with something that's so vastly different and better now.
Yeah, of course.
That I feel like it's really been an evolution. We've really evolved it into something that I would actually like to attend. Which is saying something. Because the published Magical School, Hogwarts, on reflection, I would not like to attend that school.
I think I'd still like to go. I'd love to fuck around for 7 years and mess up my life. Just to be in a weird magic castle where insane shit happens. Mm. I think that's a good thing to do when you're a child.
All right.
Okay. So, I started out doing some research to see if other people had talked about an Australian magical school so I could rip off their ideas.
Okay.
And I found... a couple of things. I found one very detailed Reddit post, which I'll link to. I disagreed with basically every single point. It definitely wasn't written by an Australian, and it falls into the JK trap of just trying to transplant Hogwarts and paint it with some local colour, rather than making up a school that makes sense for the country. But it did have one idea that was cool, and that was five houses based on the five stars of the Australian Cross. No, sorry, not the Australian Cross. The Southern Cross.
All right.
Which is the constellation on our Australian flag. I thought that was a cool idea, but unfortunately all the house names suck because stars don't have cool names.
No, they don't.
So it was stupid. And the other thing that I found was one episode of the Australian podcast Plumbing the Death Star, episode 150. I name dropped it in our last episode because I did my notes out of order and forgot that I hadn't introed it yet.
We'll link it again in the show notes as well.
We'll link it again in the show notes as well. They basically did an episode just like this where they tried to come up with their Australian magical school for Harry Potter world. Yeah. They had some ideas that I liked and a lot of stuff that I really didn't, but if you like listening to our nonsense, check out them because...
oh, yeah.
It's just more nonsense, more of the same.
Yeah, more nonsense, but about other things besides Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Great stuff.
So, I have the essential components of a school.
Sweet. Okay.
What I think, the things that we need to decide on, the name of the school, obviously.
Yeah.
The location, including how it's hidden and protected.
Sure.
The number and ages of the students. How do they get to school? How are they enrolled, including Muggleborns and Indigenous students? A house system, or lack thereof, uniforms, subjects, extracurriculars, and finally, the school motto.
Okay, I have all that, so that's great. Okay,
perfect. Yeah, anything that we need to add?
I think that's the bones, that's what we'll need, and hopefully yeah. Any other moments of genius will reveal themselves as we blabber on.
We'll find it. We'll find it in the moment.
Okay. Let's start with name.
Now, Yeah, I don't know if our listeners know this, but historically, every time we try to name something, usually like characters in a book that we're writing or like some kind of nonsense with just the two of us talking together, what happens is I suggest a name and it's crap and bad, and then immediately Jem steps in and suggests a much better, cooler, perfect name. And it's like her superpower. So do you have a name for the school ready?
I have some ideas. I have some names that I think are kind of shit. So we'll talk about them. Did you have anything down here, or are we just depending on me to come in with a name?
I had some bones that I thought you could work from. First of all, the names from the sources I just mentioned. In Plumbing the Death Star, they named their school Wattle Brush Academy.
That's a good
because,
one.
Because, yeah, they were playing on the idea that Hogwarts may have come from the Hogwart flower.
Yeah.
Or from the word what hog reversed, we don't know.
Yeah.
And also from Reddit, not from the post itself, but from some of the comments, people suggested Gaz's School of Magic and Shit. Or Baz's School of Witchy Grub Craft and Pissery. I thought those were both very good.
I love those.
Yeah, those are great. Gaz's School of Magic and Shit is great. But in terms of JK's naming convention of word for magic and then word for house, that's really hard to do in Australia because we have many, many Indigenous languages.
Yes.
So I had a go at this. I don't know if it's any good. I don't think we'll use it. But I decided to use the Indigenous language to the area where we grew up.
Bundjalung.
The Bundjalung language. Yep. I didn't know if we were going to shout that out or not.
Oh, whoops.
that's fine. just because, you know, there's thousands of languages and we don't know them all and we couldn't possibly go through all of them. I just picked the one where we grew up because that makes sense to me. So in the Bundjalung language, there is a word for stone, which is Nurum. Nurum. Okay. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly. It's spelled in English N-Y-U-R-U-H-M.
Okay.
And that word means stone, but it also means magic or clever. So it might be magic stone. And then Binny, which means house. So Nurumbini, stone magic house.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
That was the best name I could come up with. Now you go and blow me out of the water.
I think, honestly, yours I think is better. But...
Oh, cool. This will be the first time ever.
So I started like you. I was like, okay. There's lots of words in many different Indigenous languages for things like meeting place or house or something like that. So I'm like, okay, well, I can't choose one language. I didn't go for your route. I'm like, okay. Then I was thinking about making a link to the rainbow serpent because I think the emblem of the school might be the rainbow serpent because I just think that's cool. But again, the rainbow serpent has many names and rainbow school doesn't sound cool and it sounds kind of fruity. So I was like,
we don't want a fruity school.
No. That's for the gay island off the coast of Australia.
Oh, yeah. Oh, how did I not talk about that in culture? We have a gay island. It's too late now. We've got to kick ahead with school.
Then I was thinking about what the plumbing boys did with wattle brush, like a type of plant may be a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's very like, you know, mass appeal and like, you know, still relevant to the native land.
Yeah. And also it sounds good and official, like Wattle Brush Academy. Like sounds absolutely good. That sounds like a real proper school instead of Kaz's School of Magic and Shit, which sounds made up.
Then I thought, what if I tried to connect like land, water and sky into a name?
Ooh.
But I couldn't think of how to do this. So I thought of water could be something to do with the rainbow serpent or maybe like a billabong. But I couldn't think about the other two elements. And so then I was thinking, okay, but most importantly, despite what formal or lengthy name I give this magic school, what's most important is going to be how the kids that go to that school and other people in the Australian culture refer to it by its nickname.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the important thing.
Ooh.
So I came up with one that I think kind of incorporates some of the ideas I was thinking of. And it is wanky. Just fair warning, wanker warning, content warning. Okay.
Content warning, wankery.
Yeah, okay. Aurora Australis Academy of Magic. Right?
Ooh, I love that.
But its nickname, you've heard of Triple J. Now get ready for Triple A. Triple A.
That's dumb as shit.
Where'd you go, Triple A? Yeah. It's just, I can see it. And then I was thinking also, like, there's a concept I've come up with later. I might actually have to describe this later. But basically, I'll touch on this a bit later, but another idea I had was combining the concepts of, like, the red dirt of the inland of the country and, like, mm-hmm. the sand of the coast. Okay. So I was thinking something to do with ochre and sand, or ochre and shore, like ochre shore or something like Ooh. That. But then I was thinking also the nickname would be Ochre, right? Ochre Academy.
Yeah, of course.
Or School of Ochres.
Yeah, ochre was one of the things that I was going to pull for my archetypical Australian characters. Ochre is like Bogan. No, wait, Bogan is a Australian thing as well. Ochre like is like hillbilly. Hillbilly, redneck. Yeah, that's the best I can do. Sorry.
Yeah.
Look it up yourself. It's O-K-K-A if you don't know what an ochre is.
Yeah. So if we had something like ochre sand or ochre shore, it would just be nicknamed ochre.
I like ochre that school. A lot. Ochre shore is good, and then the students would call themselves ochres as well.
Yeah. Ochre shore, I think, works quite nicely. It still sounds like something that you would hear. Like, if I was on the Gold Coast and I heard that a kid was going to Ochre Shore Academy or Ochre Shore School, I'd be like, mm-hmm. that sounds so Gold Coasty.
Yeah. I like Ochre Shore Academy. I think Academy sounds a bit more official than school.
Yeah. But I also really like AAA. And I think Aurora Australis Academy sounds like something that, like, the Federation of Australia would name mm-hmm. its, like, official school. So I can see it go both ways. But those are my suggestions.
Just briefly, if our school was called Nurumbini, the nickname that the students give it would be the bin.
It would be
bin school.
Yeah, the bin chicken would be their unofficial mascot, all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Bin chicken is ibis, a kind of ibises are from Egypt, so people should know what an ibis is. But like a what's the word? Bird. A scavenger bird.
I thought you were looking for the word for bird.
Yeah. No, I was looking for the word for scavenger. I know what a bird is.
Oh my god.
I was like, what's like a bin predator?
Bin
scavenger.
Oh my god. Okay. Locations and how it's hidden. Should we get into that?
Should we decide on a name?
Oh, all right. I think Ochre Shore. I kind of like Ochre Shore. Yeah, Ochre Shore's nice. It's not as wanky as AAA.
Mm-hmm.
Ochre Shore. Yeah. Let's do it.
I really like the idea of the students calling themselves Ochre and saying that they go to, like, the school's called Ochre.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love the Australian tradition of giving everything a nickname that makes it sound stupid.
And this actually folds in quite nicely with one of the big structural elements of my school, so I guess we'll be choosing that structural element later because it fits for the name.
Okay, cool. <that's>... I guess we've landed on that. Yeah, so next, location and how it's hidden and protected. Again, I've got some couple of ideas from others that I want to run through and dismiss quickly.
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
First of all, on Reddit, so many people being like, what if we hid the school inside of Uluru? No!
No.
Here's one. It would honestly be kind of cool if the school was hidden at Uluru. It's already sacred to the Aboriginals. So don't put it there, then. And I'm pretty sure they're restricting visits to it. It could be inside Uluru or on top and just concealed within visibility to anti-Mako charms. You said it in your quote. It's sacred to the Aboriginals. And they're restricting visits. Up. So don't put the school there. Anyway. The plumbing boys also fell into the trap of wanting to put it under Uluru, but then they are like, no, actually, that's bad. So they did course correct. Yep. Good. And they eventually decided on a bunch of corrugated iron demountables hidden in an abandoned sheep farm. And that's great. Loved that.
It's a vibe. It's a real vibe.
It's absolutely a vibe. But yeah, I think we've got some of our own ideas. Do you want to pitch something or do you want to hear mine?
I'd like to pitch. So I think initially when the idea of an Australian school was first proposed in like the new developing colonized Australia, mm-hmm. It was in one location, and it was, like, trying to emulate that Hogwarts style, where there's, like, a secret hidden location, all the kids get sent there for mm-hmm. a year, and there's house system, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, initially, this would have been reserved for white Australian magical children.
Absolutely.
And then, maybe a couple of decades pass, maybe a century, it gets to, like, the 1950s, and they're like, oh, hey, you know, we should open up our educational institution to Indigenous kids and kids mm-hmm. that aren't white. So they're like, okay, well, let's go out to communities and ask people to give us their kids for 12 months.
Yeah.
And given the history of this country, especially with First Nations people and stolen generations, that went terribly.
Of course.
So this is just how I think that all transpired. And now I want to talk about, when I'm talking about the school from now on and what are we calling it? Ochre Shore. Ochre Shore mm-hmm. Academy. I think I want to talk about it in, like, my idealized, modern, contemporary version of what this school looks like.
Okay.
Okay? So just, like, go on a little journey with me. You can imagine how it might have developed to this point, but this is how I want to say it looks like now. Mm-hmm.
We're creating our perfect fictionalized school. I don't think we have to fill it with racism if we don't want to.
No, yeah. So my Okeshore, it would not be in one location.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I think that there are several locations throughout the country where the students would travel to complete their studies and mm-hmm. learn about different kinds of magics on and around significant cultural sites.
Perfect.
The Okeshore school year would follow the Australian school year in real life. So there's about 4 terms, about 3 months long for each term, mm-hmm. starting in January, ending in December.
Mm-hmm.
That's the school year. So I can see the magical students going to one place for 3 months and doing a term there, and then the next term they go to a different spot in the country and they do their studies in a different environment.
Okay.
They learn practical, hands-on instruction for that particular place, and based on that place's culture, history, and teachings. I can see that there would be boarding arrangements for the students either on that location or nearby, which is cloaked and hidden from muggles mm-hmm. with enchantments, or maybe it's underground or underwater, depending on where the place is, you know. I can see that students and their families would typically be given the option to board on location for that term or to travel to that location from their home each day. And naturally, these arrangements would vary depending on the family, how close they may live to the locations in question and their cultures and all that sort of stuff. So,
okay.
That's how I'm picturing the location.
Yeah. Okay, I did come up with, like, one idea for a central campus, but I think I love the idea of a school being a group more than it is a physical place, and, like, the school,
yep.
the Okers just sort of travel around the country and they go to these places of intense mm-hmm. magical power.
And there's, like, there. Distinct places. There's, like, yeah. maybe 2 dozen or something of okay. places that they travel to.
So I guess yeah. I'm pitching one of the places, or maybe, like, a common setup for what the campus is yeah. in certain places. Are you familiar sure. with the town of Cooper Pedy?
Very familiar, and it's definitely one of the places I have on here.
Yeah, okay. So Cooper Pedy is an underground mining town. Quite literally, it is a town built into the tunnels cut in red sandstone for opal mining. 80% of the town's population live underground because it's cool down there in the tunnels.
Mm.
So here's a quote about Cooper Pedy. The remote South Australian town of Cooper Pedy takes its name from the Aboriginal words Cooper and Pity, meaning white fella hole. And that's accurate.
I love that.
Yeah. The township is full of holes dug by eager white fellas. In fact, most of the town still lives in those holes. Cooper Pedy is located for the most part underneath the outback sandstone. Mm-hmm. So I would highly recommend Googling this place. It's spelled C-O-O-B-E-R, second word, P-E-D-Y.
Yeah.
And you can look at pictures of the town of, like, people who have walked around with cameras and taken photos. And it is this otherworldly place all dug into the, like, the red, red stone. And all the light coming through is red,
mm-hmm.
but, like, a soft light red. Mm-hmm. And there's just, like, shelves carved directly into the walls, and yeah. someone has, like, a spa in their home because they've just dug it into the rock and filled it with water. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Like, it's just a very, very cool, interesting town. And I yeah. like the idea of, like, different places will have different setups, but for the most part, the students are brought to a place and then we just put them down into the tunnels and they live underground, and that's where they stay yeah. hidden, especially during the day. And then they come up to the surface in the night to do their magic in the dark where they won't be seen.
Yeah. I could even see that if we were discussing that historically there was one location, Cooper Pedy being that location, underground yeah. city/school. I could really see that going on. So
yeah,
I like that a
especially
lot.
Because it used to be an opal mining town. Like, this is why it's all underground. So maybe yeah. opals have some sort of magical property and they're like, well, that's a good place to put all the magic kids, where the opals are.
Yeah, makes sense too. If the rainbow serpent is the emblem, it's a rainbow snake, like an opal. It's like, you mm-hmm. know, opals could be significant in the, you know, how like in the house system at Hogwarts they have all the rubies and sapphires and emeralds for all the different houses and the yeah. points. Opals could be incorporated into the decoration or the structures of the school.
Yeah, I love that a lot. Yeah. Opals, for anyone immediately not familiar with an opal, it's like either a white or a black stone which has a rainbow flecks throughout it in all different colours. So if you hold it up to the light, you can see basically the entire rainbow in either a white or black stone. They're very, very beautiful.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Okay.
I have some, like, I like a list of just, like, some locations that I think, if we're going with my structure of Okeshaw being, like, it's all over the shop and you mm-hmm. move around each term and you learn different things in different places. Mm-hmm. I have some specific locations that people might like to Google and get an image of that I've listed here.
Yeah, love to hear it.
So Cooper Pedy, South Australia, like we just said. Mm-hmm. The Daintree Rainforest in Queensland, which is right next to the Great Barrier Reef. I think that would be a great location to learn about marine animals and magizoology and magical botany, especially. Mm-hmm. Lord Howe Island is, I think it's off the shore of New South Wales. It's full of, like, amazing wildlife. It's also very isolated. You could only mm-hmm. allowed to have 400 people max on the island in the real world. The Pinnacles in WA, it looks like the moon, basically. It's just a big desert, and there's, like, these towering structures of rocks just coming up, like, stalagmites.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. The Three Sisters in New South Wales, Litchfield National Park in Northern Territory, Alice Springs, right. which, of course, is where Uluru is situated in Northern Territory, but, like
I
said...
Yeah, I was going to say... If we are traveling around to different places, visiting Uluru would definitely be something that's on the cards. Not climbing it or getting inside or underneath, but visiting and learning from the peoples there, that would be great.
Yeah. Like I said, with all of these places, I'm imagining that the boarding, which, again, is voluntary depending on the term. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
It's like, if you're at a sacred site, say, like, Alice Springs on Uluru, the boarding would not be there. It would be, like, a couple of... kilometers outside of it in like a concealed area that's not a sacred site.
Yeah, like, a nearby hidden underground campus that has been there for 100 years.
Yeah, the kids can secretly travel and like learn and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. I've got here 12 Apostles in Victoria,
mm-hmm.
Catherine in Northern Territory, the Whitsundays in Queensland, Mount Warning in New South Wales, and Cradle Mountain in Tasmania.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, oh wait, just a quick fact about Mount Warning. That area and the rainforest surrounding it up from New South Wales into Queensland is called Australia's Green Cauldron. So that could be, you know, potions, botany, mm-hmm. lots of stuff there.
Yeah, I was just about to name drop the Green Cauldron. If you didn't bring up Mount Warning, I was going to. So the Green Cauldron is basically what is left of a super volcano.
Yeah.
So if you imagine Mount Warning, and you can Google Mount Warning if you're not familiar with it. Mount Warning is a mountain, and it used to be a central, like the central lava chamber of a volcano. Mm-hmm. And the volcano itself expanded all the way out to the mountain range that surrounds Mount Warning. If you Google Australia's Green Cauldron, you'll see how massive this area that I'm talking about is. It's like, I don't even know, 50 square kilometers, maybe 100? Huge. There used to be a super volcano, the likes of which does not exist on the planet Earth anymore because we've cooled down from dinosaur times. But yeah, the whole area used to be just one volcano, and since it last erupted millions upon billions of years ago, there is now an incredibly biodiverse and rich area there. So mm-hmm. that would be a great place to go and learn magic. I really love Australia's Green Cauldron, and it's like a cool thing that I've researched for separate reasons.
Yeah, so, like, all those places I just listed, highly recommend if you're really interested in what we're talking about, give those places mm-hmm. a Google, look at the beautiful images, admire the natural beauty of Australia, and just have a think about if there was, like, this travelling Okeshaw Academy and all these kids were, every terms, every 3 months, they were going to these places on location, and mm-hmm. sure, they'd be doing their usual magical studies, their charms, and all their bread and butter, but while they're in these specific locations, they'd also be learning about the relevant oral histories, the relevant mm-hmm. spiritualities of that place, the cultural learnings, the way that the people in the land communicate in that space. So say for the kids that are staying in Daintree and Rainforest, in the Daintree Rainforest next to the Great Barrier Reef, that would be amazing for all the kids that are super interested in things like marine magizoology, right? Or like mm-hmm. the botany of the rainforest. And like, you know, like all these kids would get to see all these different like environments and the ways that people live differently and learn about all these different cultural practices. So I think that's just how I'd like to imagine the school.
I do have one more thing to add in there. And this is an idea that just leapt to me when you were saying oral histories. Oral histories obviously referring to like the Indigenous Australian histories and the dreaming. But the idea of learning history orally just made something spark in my head. I've mentioned before the Goldfields and the Shipwreck Coast wouldn't mm-hmm. it be cool if the students could go to those places and learn from, like, the ghosts of the people there?
Yeah.
Learning from the ghosts of the people in the Shipwreck Coast, like, original colonizers and settlers to Australia. And, mm-hmm. like, the people who never even made it to the country but are now trapped here as ghosts. That's yeah. fascinating. That would be so interesting.
Oh, yeah. I plan for them to go everywhere. And also, they'll have to do the school excursions to places like Canberra to see their government mm-hmm. and Ballarat to see their bank and stuff like that. Like, maybe not yeah. the prison. Like, leave the kiddies out of the prison.
But yeah,
like,
they don't need to go to the prison.
But, like, you know, so that they understand these institutions and how they affect yeah. their society. I think, but like, you know, yeah.
Yeah, they would go past it on their way down to Tasmania, because they've got to go to Tasmania at some point.
Of course, of course.
Yeah.
And, like, I've listed a bunch of locations that are, like, more remote, you know, natural beauty, mm-hmm. but I'm sure they'd spend at least one or two terms in places like Melbourne and Sydney as well. Because, mm-hmm. like, I mean, sure, it's hard to hide a bunch of kids there, but there'd be ways, and, like, they can stay in, like, outer Melbourne, outer Sydney, all these sorts of things, and then travel into the city to learn about that place. Like, I think it's, like, definitely the idea of, like, a moving, mobile, flexible school where it's like you're getting the full vast experience of this country, of the different kind of environments, of the different magic and practices that take place across this land. I think it's very important for their practical education. So that's
I love this
that
I love this yeah. so much. So my next thing was number and ages of students, but let's skip that for a sec and go with how do they get to school, because
okay
yeah their school is all over the fucking place and you kind of already covered it.
Yeah,
I was thinking, when I was thinking one campus, and I knew that we weren't going to have one campus, but I came up with that originally because I knew that we would then branch off from it.
Yeah.
Traveling to the nearest capital city, unless the school is closer, and then flying cars from there. Mm-hmm. But if the school is traveling from place to place to place, what if they have some kind of magical school bus, like the magic oh, okay. school bus? Like, one bus, and it maybe it flies, or maybe it travels on land or whatever, but it's, like, one bus that can fit however many students and teachers are traveling around from place to place, and, like, it just takes them where okay. they're going.
So that happens every 3 months once they're moving to yeah. another location. Yeah, I
every,
can definitely
like, big
see
migration.
That. Yeah, like, if all of Beauxbatons or most of Beauxbatons can fit in a tiny carriage, then yeah, the whole Australian Oakeshore school can fit in one magic school bus that ships them from their first term location to their second term location.
Yeah.
But as that, for, like, yeah. yeah.
That's from location to location. And then from, like, wherever they're staying to the location, or, like, if they're staying in their homes and traveling to the locations, like, brooms, portkeys, like, all the usual yep. travel stuff, walking, depending on how far yeah. it is.
Smoke travel, magic cars, muggle transport. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is great. I was also thinking about, remember the age-old joke, like, when you talk to anyone who's not from Australia, and you say they're from Australia, and they're like, oh, do you really ride kangaroos to school?
It's yeah.
like the classic thing. What if they did? Okay? Yeah. So, like, what if there's, like, a magical creature? I'm going to invent it now on the spot. I'm going to call it Skippy. It's, like, a kangaroo-looking creature, but you can get in its pouch. It's not gross in there. It's not, like, a kangaroo pouch in real life.
Yeah.
You can get in its pouch, and instead of, like, hopping along quite quickly, it actually sort of space jumps, and so one hop is, like, 1,000 kilometers or something like that, or it just takes you where you need to go in a matter of like a minute.
I love that, like 7 mile boots or whatever they're called.
Yeah, a little Skippy, and it's just yeah. some kids that have a domesticated Skippy or have some Skippies around town, they can just ride a kangaroo to school.
Also, I just need to say this because it's disgusting and people should know. People seem to think that kangaroos' pouches are kind of like a bag. No. They're not. They're more like an orifice.
They're more like a like vagina.
Yeah, I was going to say like a mouth, but no, they're more like a giant pussy. So yeah. The idea of climbing into a kangaroo's pouch is repulsive.
Yeah,
it's like fleshy, maybe the worst thing I can imagine.
Wet, like literally when the joey is like a tiny little pea-sized thing and it has to crawl out of the pouch as a little embryo or whatever. Like it's like a vagina. It's like gross. Yeah.
People think of them as bags because joeys keep going in there when they're very, very large, like they jump in and yeah. out of the pouch. But like the idea of a person getting in there is no good. Bad
moist.
To think about.
Terrible. Yeah.
So I like your magic kangaroo that does have like a magic bag. That's
yeah.
good.
Skippies.
I like Skippies, traveling around by Skippies.
So yeah, but again, like probably most of the kids, especially because this school's going everywhere and staying places for 3 months at a time, probably the majority of the kids are boarding in like these hidden, magically enchanted. I'm just imagining like a bungalow, that's, like, got, like, a bunch of beds in it, a shower block. There's, like, a mess hall where there's, like, the food is served. And then there's, like, a bunch of outdoor areas where all the kids walk to and all that sort of stuff. Like, just a Demountables vibe, you know, like a campsite. And, like,
it's going to change. It's going to change basically every term because every term is in a new location. And maybe that location is quite close to where you live or where members of your family live. So in that case, you'll stay with them for that time.
Exactly.
Or you'll be boarding with the rest of the school. Or there might be periods, like you said, there might be times where they're visiting Melbourne. I imagine that would be a semester where, like, a lot of what they're learning is Muggle integration. And, like, maybe they get boarded into the various houses of witches and wizards who live in Melbourne, because there's got to be tons of them.
Yeah.
There'll be different arrangements every time.
And, so, like, I can definitely imagine, like, the first day of term when you arrive in your new location, the entire day is just like, all right, kids, time to clean.
Yeah.
Because it's all dusty and gross from, like, not being inhabited for a while.
Yeah, you rock up to the place and, like, the first thing you do is clean and set it up. And then, like, learn the local environment and the local place. Like, here's where we're going to be going for school and here's the arrangements for here and that sort of thing.
Yep. Great.
Yeah, I love this. I think this would be such a cool school to go to.
I know, through. I literally, I want to go. Like, imagine just traveling around this country for a solid 7 years. We'll figure that out soon.
Yeah, that's the next thing to talk about.
Seeing all these amazing places, being rural, remote, being urban, being suburban, being on islands, coastlines, mountains, like desert. It'd be just incredible.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk numbers and ages of students.
Let's go.
In Australia, our primary school starts at like 5 and continues to about age 11, and then high school is age 12 to about 18.
Yeah.
I was thinking this would just be a high school, but then last episode we were talking about children practicing magic from a very, very young age.
Okay.
Do we think very, very young children are going to this school? Because it's quite intense to be gone for 3 months at a time.
No, I definitely think this is a high school.
Okay, good. I agree. Yeah.
So I just want to start quickly. So if we're basing the student population off our UK numbers, which we said might be not accurate based on what we talked about with colonization, but we're going to go off it. So in the UK in the 90s, that's about 700 Hogwarts students.
Right.
If we do the comparison between populations with the UK and Australia, we can make the assumption that there's maybe 200 Australian wizarding school students, 300 maximum. It's not a big amount of kids. It's very
small. I would go from like 150 to 300 and average it out at about 200 and something.
200 and something sounds about right. And honestly, as well, I think this school is going to be voluntary, like, because I think there'll be plenty of communities, plenty of people who don't want to send their kids away for that amount of time.
Yeah.
Especially Stolen Generations history, Indigenous communities, and especially because there's, like, as we've established, rural and remote centers that are completely magical. And so I think if we're basing this like a high school, and these kids have already been living in this magical community for their entire childhood, being homeschooled, a lot of families might just opt to be like, well, hey, they can learn here on community, or we'll teach them ourselves. They're already integrated. Homeschooling.
Or distance education. Like,
homeschooling or distance. I really just think... Yeah.
You get all of your schooling mailed to you by the Australian government, and then you just do it yourself in your own time with, like, your parents as teachers, or maybe by calling in to somebody through your magic mirror. And then you do your end of year exams. Probably you would travel to a place and do your exams at a certain set time, and then it's like, okay, cool, you're fully qualified, there you go.
Yeah, I think that would be an option for some people. I think still that there'd be a pretty big population, like about 200 kids going to this, to Oakeshore.
Because
a lot of parents don't have to deal with their kids. It's like, fuck off, go to school.
It's good to send your kids away and get a fucking break from them. Definitely, but I think definitely there would be, like, certain Indigenous communities that are like, you can have our kids over our dead body, who would not send their kids away.
Or even, like, skeptical of this, you know, of this institution's teaching. It's like, well, we've been teaching our people for thousands of years. We have our own practices and culture.
Exactly.
Well, we need to go to your school, you know?
Yeah, we don't need to teach, we don't need to learn your white fella magic. We've got our own magic.
Yeah.
And also, another thing I was thinking is, a lot of rural communities are farming communities. So, like, you don't necessarily want to send your kids away during growing and planting seasons because they're working.
Yeah.
But they might attend, like, maybe one or two semesters out of the year certain times, or just when the schools are close by and they can commute daily. So they wouldn't necessarily attend full time, but they might attend one semester a year.
Yeah,
it's and do the rest by distance education. Mm-hmm. It would be far more flexible.
Yeah.
Okay, so ages of students. I just said our high schools are 12 to 18. Are we doing 11 to 17, or what do we want
to
do?
I like 12 to 18 because then by the time you finish school, no matter where you are in the country, you can drink.
Absolutely. Which means that they'll really be drinking from like 15 to 16, just like we were.
Yeah. So 12 to 18, I think, is fine and appropriate. I think parents are more willing to send off their 12-year-old to go gallivanting around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It also means that basically everyone's teenagers. Like the first year, you're a kid and it's all new and exciting. And then after that, everyone's teens. And I think teens riding around together on a bus and living underground is a far more manageable dynamic.
So before the age of 12, kids are taught magic at home. For kids mm-hmm. from all magical communities, they may also be homeschooled in things like math, English, literacy, which is the same in the UK. Mm-hmm. It depends on the family and the kids. Some people might send their kids to, like, a muggle school, or if they're a muggle born or a half-blood, they would already be going to a muggle school, so they'll be learning the maths and all that sort of stuff.
I think muggle schooling's quite common for young kids. You go to muggle school to learn how to read and write, and then mum and dad teach you fly, buzz off spells and whisper boomerang spells and, like, the basics when you're at home. Basic potion craft.
But I think even in these, like, rural all-magic communities, there would still be, like, some sort of school that's public that is, like, here's how to add, here's how to subtract, here's how to write in English, or whatever language they're using. Because, you know, those kids need to know those skills.
Of course.
It's important. Magical school, so Okashore is an expectation, but ultimately if you wish to homeschool, you can do so. I've already covered this. So, that's what I have for, like, the schooling age and the population. 12 to 18, about 200 kids, 300 absolute maximum would be the expectation.
And for context, we grew up in, like, a small town, not completely rural area, but, like, what's the medium between rural and city?
Suburban. But even then, I've looked at it online, it is considered rural where we grew up.
Okay, cool. So we grew up in, like, a rural area. There were a couple of high schools in our local area. Our high school had a population of 12 to 1300, and my year group was 250.
Yeah.
By the time we graduated, we'd dropped down to, I think, 150. 100 kids had dropped out of school before we graduated.
Yeah.
Which was allowed. You're allowed to leave 2 years before I left. So this is an incredibly small school. Thinking of an entire school being, like, just my year group? Jesus Christ.
I mean, like, the primary school that we went to, which was even more rural, was 100 kids total for all, like, kindergarten to year six, 100 children. So just double that. And that's about the average cohort. And, like, in that primary school, everyone knew everybody's name. We all knew each other because there's 100 kids. Like...
Because there was between one and two classes for each year, because there was between 30 and 60 students. No, it wouldn't be 60. There was only 100 of us. Yeah. It would have been...
In my class, there was 10 students.
Yeah, it would have been like between 10 and 30 students for each year group, because there was 10 students.
There was like 7 girls and 3 boys. Like, it was so funny. Like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I'm misremembering because I'm confusing with high school, which had 30 students to a class.
No, primary school.
Primary school was much smaller. Yeah. I'm like imagining the primary school classrooms and the number of desks, and I'm realizing that I don't think I was ever in a class with more than 15 students.
No.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, our primary school was small.
So how are these kids enrolled? Muggleborns and Indigenous students need to be considered here as well.
Yeah.
So we've already said that there's no trace. We said that last episode because it doesn't make sense. So how
and like also just while we're on the topic of the trace, it doesn't make sense in the Harry Potter series itself. Because it's like it introduces it at the beginning and then JK is like, I'm sick of this. I don't want to deal with it anymore. So she changes the rules for it and basically gets rid of it and makes it pointless because she just hated it after a while. So fuck the trace. We're not doing that.
I'm thinking it's like a mix of census and self-enrollment. So I think like Australia has a census. It's important. Like every 10 years or so, we have people.
It's way less than that.
5 years? I don't know.
Doesn't the census happen every 4 years or something? It's like a letter that shows up.
I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, whatever. Who cares?
Every couple of years, you either get sent a letter or someone arrives in your town and starts counting people. So I think there would be something of that element in a magical sense. Obviously, there's problems with this, especially in Indigenous communities. They might hide their children from the government, understandably. So I think the census system would exist, but I think also when it comes to, like, enrolling your kids in Oakeshaw, I think that ultimately it's a self-enrollment thing. Like, if you have a kid that's born, they start showing magical qualities, you would simply contact whoever it needs to be contact, the government, the school, and be like, hey, I've got a name for your list. People who are muggle-borns, though, this is interesting. I don't know how we would detect muggle-borns. What do you think?
Yeah, so I was thinking about the Hogwarts system, which is there's a book of names, and when magical people are born, their name is part of the book, and then 11 years later, McGonagall or whoever takes all the names from the book and sends out the letters.
Okay.
Interesting system. I think when a magical person is born in Australia, a cockatoo shows up. This is at birth when you're born. A cockatoo shows up and says your acceptance letter to the school out loud, and you have to pay attention and remember the details because they're not written down and they don't repeat. And then you just got to figure it out from there.
That's fun.
Yeah. And then for muggles, a teacher shows up and is like, hey, were you paying attention to the cockatoo? If you weren't, I can help you. But for wizards, you just got to know.
So, like, do the cockatoos tell the teachers that, like, a muggle-born child has been born?
Yeah, no, I don't think the teachers send the cockatoos. I think the cockatoos just know.
Yeah, but do they tell the teachers? Because...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Like, you just said the cockatoo shows up at the family, and yeah. It's like, hey, this is a witch. And the family's like, what the fuck, am I hallucinating? I just had a baby.
Yeah, like, I guess the cockatoos then fly back to the school and tell the principal, and or the vice principal, and it's their job to keep track of it.
Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah. I think, you know, something to that extent, I was thinking like a map, like,
find a treasure and the treasure is your education.
No, I was thinking like, if we're arguing that Cooper Petey, or something akin to that, it was like the original location for the school, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing maybe, I'm picturing like a cavern in there with like a wall, and on that wall is carved a big map of the country.
Ooh.
And maybe when someone is born who is magical, like a bit of the wall chips away and there's an opal shard underneath and it shines.
Great.
And so like the Cerebro. the teachers have a bit of a stroll by and they're like, oh, this shard is shining. Someone must have just been born. And they use some sort of spell to sort of figure out exactly where that person is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they maybe do a cursory glance to see, oh, is this person magical in a magical community? Yep, they are. No need to worry. But if they're in like a muggle area or if they're from muggle-born parents, they're like, okay, we'll take a note of that. We'll have to go to this place and, you know, figure out in 12 years or so how to contact these people or something like that. Something to that extent.
Yeah, you've made the system a lot more complicated. I mostly just wanted to keep the idea of a bird shows up, but instead of a letter, it just says your message out loud because we have talking birds in Australia. Why not use them?
Oh, yeah. No, I was talking more about muggle-borns.
Okay. Yeah, muggle-borns, I think, get visited by a bird and then also a person to confirm that the bird was not crazy.
Let's talk about house system then.
Okay.
Should I go first because I have a different view, or should you go first? I don't know.
No, you go first because before we just a little peek behind the curtain, listeners. Before we recorded this episode, we talked about some ideas because we've been talking about this since we were 5 years old.
Yeah.
And I think we decided on no house system. But then when I was doing the research for this episode, I came up with an idea for a house system that I got very excited about. So I have a house system that I would like to share with you.
Okay.
But let's talk about Jem's ideas first, because they're probably going to be more canonical. Mine's just fun to talk about.
So, like we've established, it's a pretty small population of kids, and the boarding situation will fluctuate. So I don't see there being houses
like there is at Hogwarts,
where you stay in your dormitory with your own house. So I can see there being sporting houses, and this isn't based on personality traits or sporting aptitude or anything. It's just random or alphabetical. And the houses would 100% be named after, like, magical creatures. So, like, there'd be the Skippy's house, the Billywig's house, the Bunyip's and the Yowie's or something like that. And they'd be used mainly for recording attendance, for sporting events and competitions, for, like, particular assemblies where it's like, oh, we need to tell this information to specifically the Bunyip kids because their plumbing has been fucked up or something like that. or a buddy or support system. So it's like, oh, all the Bunyip kids stand over here so we can count you and make sure you all have a partner when we walk through this rainforest and stuff like that.
Yeah, makes sense.
And I guess, like, maybe each of the houses has a little little emblem and a little color, and maybe these kids wear a patch so you can tell them apart. But yeah, overall, it's not the same, like, personality-driven, fucked-up, competitive thing that Hogwarts has. It's just, yeah, like, this is the house that you were randomly allocated into, and it only really matters on, like, school swimming day. Like, it doesn't affect you.
Yeah, I think that is a far better vibe for a school. In terms of houses, I was thinking...
I'm not done, sorry.
Oh, no, sorry. I'm not going to try and launch into my houses now. I was just going to say, I think that it really makes sense to have, like, some sort of organizational system for the students, because, as we've said, the numbers are going to fluctuate from term to term, and also,
yeah,
they're kind of living, not completely unsupervised, but on their own, so it makes sense if you sort them into smaller groups and have,
yeah,
older students in charge of the groups and looking out for the younger kids. So houses are a good way to do that, I guess.
Mm. So here's where Oakeshott stuff comes in. So I also think that if we have, say, 200 to 300 kids, that to make it even easier for the staff, they might split the school into juniors and seniors.
Mm.
So that way there's a cohort of about 100 to 150 for the teachers to manage on their trips around the country.
Yeah.
And so juniors and seniors wouldn't be educated together.
Yeah.
They would see each other at, like, end of year ceremony or graduation or whatever you want to call it, and maybe some important events, but, mm-hmm, like, ultimately they would be in their own separate timetables and they'd be on different parts of the country.
Okay, so you don't even think they're in the same places. I thought the same places, no, but you're splitting the classes into separate groups.
No, I'm thinking different places. So juniors aged 12 to 15 might start with their schooling being in more rural, remote, inland locations, yeah, that are easier to hide in while they're still untrained and not as stealthy.
Mm-hmm.
But senior students, ages 16 to 18, would travel to more coastal populations where they might be more likely to accidentally come across non-magical spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have the skills and learning to be better at hiding themselves and being more trained in their magic.
Mm-hmm.
So all the juniors are in the inland of the country, and then once they graduate to senior levels, they can go to the coastal areas and learn about those different environments.
Yeah,
I
like that as well. I think earlier I said something about, like, you know, there will be time when they're educated in Melbourne and Sydney and they'll be learning more about Muggle integration. I was definitely thinking that would be, yeah, happening at the Sydney end is. Of the schooling.
It's that's like, when they're a Shaw, not an Ocker.
Yeah.
Ocker-Shaw.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when it's like you've mastered your... Well, not mastered your magic, but you've got enough control and discipline that I expect you not to fuck up and explode things so you, yeah, can hide amongst Muggles. And it's time to work on your specializations, on your more, yes, complicated high-level magic that you should have control over. And also, yeah, moving into adulthood, it's time to think about, like, for us as Muggles, it would be time to think about university-level education and specialization. For wizards, yeah, it's more like time to think about Muggle integration. How are you going to actually function in the adult world? Where are you going to be living? What are you going to be doing? That sort, yeah, of stuff. Big decision time.
And also, like, time to think about what like area you might like to go into, like if it's a trade, if you might like to study further, what you might, mm-hmm, like to specialize in, all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think splitting the school into juniors and seniors makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, the Oakers and the Shores.
Yeah, and the places they go to and the things that they learn being dependent on age as well makes a lot of sense. That works. I like, yeah, that a lot.
Yeah, it's also reflected later in the uniforms, but I'll get to that in a moment.
Okay, cool. Time for my house system.
Let's go. Let's hear
okay.
It.
So I came up with this mostly just because I got excited, and I think the most fun part of coming up with a school is coming up with the house system because it's so iconically Harry Potter. So yeah. I wanted to come up with one anyway. I wanted to avoid the JK thing of being like, here are four magical creatures from mythology because okay. that's what she did with Native American animals, and it's like, well, actually, you know, these animals have like stuff going on aside from what you've said about them, so maybe that was racist yeah. and you shouldn't have done it. So
yeah.
what I was thinking as the emblem for the Ocker schoolhouses are extinct megafauna.
Nice.
Because Australia has really cool, iconic extinct megafauna, and also they're extinct, so they're not related to anything.
Yeah.
And base the traits on a combination of the aspects of the animals and the four Australian archetypes that I talked about last episode.
Okay, cool.
That's why I went through that. So I'm going to talk about the animals first because I did the archetypes last time. Unfortunately, most extinct animals have boring science names or the name is just like giant wombat or something. So that was a bit hard, but I found some with good names and then I shortened the names to have good nicknames for the houses. So I ended up with a reptile, a bird, and then a monotreme and a marsupial, which is kind of nice. Similar to Hogwarts, except they have a reptile, a bird, and then two mammals.
Yeah, Sounds good.
So for our reptiles, I won't go through the ones that I... No, I'll briefly mention the ones that I discarded. I discarded a Megalania, which is a giant carnivorous goanna. Yeah. And I landed on Quincana, which is a giant crocodile.
Nice.
5 to 7 meters long, long legs, chases animals for food, and blade-like teeth.
Awesome.
Speculated to be one of the top predators of Australia, and definitely one of the largest. Possibly entirely terrestrial or semi-aquatic, and a persistence hunter, not an ambush predator like other crocodiles. Okay. Also signs of interspecies aggression. They fought each other.
Yeah.
Our bird, I discarded a thunderbird, which is great, and I landed on the bullock cornus.
Bullocks.
The bullock cornus, known as the demon duck of doom.
Oh, yeah. I sent you a picture of this, right?
Yeah. Or the bull bird. They were up to 2.5 meters tall, weigh 250 kilos, probably a herbivore in commas. They are called the demon duck because they share ancestry with ducks and geese, and they have a distinctly large bill, which is thick and had huge bite force.
Sure.
Similar in height to an emu, but much, much heavier, and they lived in river areas with lots of other species.
Cool.
My monotreme was the Murray Glossus hacketti, a sheep-sized echidna, a really unique species, only one in the genus, largest monotreme to have ever lived. They have a long beak, a long tongue, long legs, and they're very good at traveling. Nice. We've found burn bones, which suggest these were hunted by humans and have been depicted in indigenous rock art. Amazing. These are cool. For my marsupial, I discarded the thylacine, Tasmanian tiger, and the Vombatus hacketti, giant big wombat. Very cool. Because they would have been called the Vombats. Anyway, I landed on the Procoptodon galaia, giant short-faced kangaroo.
Yes, I've seen pictures of this guy. Yeah.
Yep. Largest kangaroo known to have ever lived, 3 meters tall, weighing 250 kilos. These animals were just fucking huge, man. They look similar to modern kangaroos and may have lived among them, but much larger. Large clawed toe on each foot, which helped them move quickly. Front paw similar, large clawed toe. And two long clawed fingers for grabbing branches and pulling down leaves to eat. They might have been too big to hop, so they walked like a human. Horrible. Making them vulnerable to being hunted by humans. And they have big face muscles to chew their food. A very widely dispersed species because they were adapted to tougher diets. Okay, here are my four animals that I'm going to build the houses on. So the houses are the Karnas, the Bullocks, the Murrays, and the Goliaths.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Karnas are our crocodile house. They're based on bush rangers. They are brave, assertive, and tenacious. They value freedom, chivalry, and persistence.
Sure.
Our Bullocks are our demon duck house with the bird as their icon. They're based on larrikins. They are mischievous, friendly, and fierce. They value humor, defiance, and camaraderie.
Nice.
Murray is the echidna house. They're based on bushmen or bush poets. They are creative, independent, and respectful. They value nature, harmony, and travel. And finally, the Galia, the kangaroo house, they're based on battlers. They are hardworking, tough, and adaptable. They value honesty, mateship, and perseverance.
Awesome.
Cool.
I love them.
That's my house system.
They're great. I think I'd be a Murray based on the school I've designed. Probably a Murray. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe either Goliaths or Murrays. Probably Murray as well. Mm. Creative, independent, respectful, value nature, harmony, and travel. Not exactly, but of the four houses I've presented, that's probably the closest one for me.
Cool.
Okay. Ah, that's a house system or lack thereof.
How do they get sorted? Is it just vibes?
Yeah, I didn't come up with a sorting system. Should have done that. just vibes. Vibes is good. I like the idea that you can pick your own house.
Yeah, I think that sounds better.
Yeah, like you don't get sorted because, like, I think you see the house emblem when you first arrive and you're told about, like, the history that it's based on, you're told the house traits and their values, and then you just pick. Because then you can pick to go with your friends if you want to.
Yeah. I like that.
And I think,
like, we can meet it halfway, you know? Mm-hmm. We can do, like, a house system, like, which isn't based on personality, but it's, like, based on these creatures and these archetypes, so it has a history to it, but they're randomly selected, You just get put in a random house. It's just for organizational and sport carnivals. And they still have these cool names and animals attached to them.
Yeah, it could be that. I guess I wanted them to still have, like, the values and, like, the personality traits so that you can feel like you're part of something. But sure. I didn't want you to be, like, forcibly sorted into one of them. Like, I want it, like, be able to pick your own house, definitely. That's more important. Because I think spending time with people that you have stuff in common with and get along with is more important than being in the badger house or whatever.
Yeah.
I really didn't want a system where, like, you're getting points based on the traits and you're in competition with each other. I don't think there's a house cup or a house cup system. And I don't think...
I don't
think you're in competition with each other at all, except for sporting events, which is just like, you've got to make teams to play sports. And this is purely just a way to organize the students. It's just like, okay, we've arrived at our new place. Here are the dorms for the Karnas, the Bullocks, the Murrays, and the Goliaths. And, you know, find your bed and sort yourselves out, basically. Or like, you know, we need to elect some students to be in charge, so we're going to get three students from Karnas, Bullocks, Murrays, and Goliaths, and they'll be the prefix.
Yeah, one vote.
Yeah, it's just an organizational system, and, like, maybe there's a bit of house pride, and, like, you know, I really love crocodiles because I'm in the Karna house, but, like, it's not a whole thing like it is in England.
Yeah.
It's far more chill.
Yeah, I could definitely say that. I love your animals way better as well than mine. So, cool. Great.
Okay.
Should we go on to uniforms?
Yes.
I have a lot of thoughts.
Okay. So. I have less thoughts, so I'll go first.
You go first.
First of all, the animal skin cloaks for formal occasions, like I was talking about last time.
Sure.
I think the general school uniform is a very, very lightweight and cool cloak with a hood designed to keep the sun off. Mm-hmm. And either I had coloured red to match the desert sand. That's when I was thinking we were going to be in Cooper Pedy. But I guess it's coloured based on whatever's going to match into wherever they are, if they're all over the place. And I think that's only worn outside. And then inside you don't wear the cloak. And it's like maybe a shorts and skirts sort of combo.
Okay, cool. So uniforms, I had junior uniforms are better suited to blending into an inland environment. So they're red, brown colours.
Perfect.
Senior uniforms are better blending into a coastal environment, so they're green, blue colours.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an easy distinction as well, you know.
Yeah.
The ochres are red and brown, the shores are green and blue.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see them as, like, good, sturdy, closed-toed shoes being essential because these kids are going to be trekking in all sorts of environments.
Yeah.
Shorts and sleeve shirts. Hoods. I had hoods as well that are attached to the shirts, or those hats, you know, those, like, caps that have a neck flap down the back to protect your neck from the sun?
Lame hats for children.
Yeah, the lame neck flap hats, but make it fashion.
Yeah.
And I think also there might be a winter uniform for colder climates that have trackies, longer sleeve jumpers. But I think for the end of year feasts and more formal or ceremonial occasions, the students might have more of a private school look with button down shirts, trousers, skirts, dresses. And that's just come from the colonial history. And maybe a ceremonial cloak with a hood.
That makes sense. Like a fancy version of the uniform for special occasions, like graduations and stuff.
Yeah, they're weatherproof and imbued with magical cloaking fibers to basically, like, make sure that if you fall into a billabong, like, you're only wet for a couple of seconds and then you get out and you're fine.
That's good. I like that.
The Quidditch and sports uniforms have more movement in them, so they might be a little bit more, like, you know, what's another word for slutty? Like, you know, showing more skin because, you know, you're flying around, most likely.
Tight-fitting and... Yeah. Form-fitting, breathable. Yes, I think the nice way to do.
Yeah,
nice way
breathable. To say it. They include knee and elbow pads, helmets, all that sort of stuff. So I also thought of this thing, which I just think is dumb and funny and definitely something that an Australian school would do. A wand lanyard or a wand loop, and then I thought, wanyard. So it's just...
A wanyard.
It's like a lanyard that you wear, but your wand is attached to it. It's optional.
Do you wear it around your neck?
You can wear it around your neck. You can take it off and strap it around your wrist. You can put it on your belt. You can put it around your head. You can put it wherever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just sort of, I can so clearly see all these kids walking through the bush with their wands hanging around their necks on the lanyard. It's just, because, like, it's just such a thing. I don't know how to describe it, but
I definitely think, and this is not just for Magical Australia, I think wand holsters should be a thing for wizarding fashion. Because you've got to carry this shit with you everywhere. It's like a long, awkward object that you have to have to hand at all times because you use it constantly throughout the day. And everyone just carries it around their pockets? Like, what the fuck? Yeah. No, you should have like a holster. You should have it on your hip or on your arm or whatever.
So my solution to that was the wanyard, which I think is also going to be an Australian magical invention.
Yeah, I like the wanyard. Yeah. Wanyard's funny. It's good.
Strap it anywhere, you know, whatever you want to do. also, as we've discussed the houses, I'm guessing the houses will have certain emblems of colours. There'll be a little patch they can be sewn onto their uniform. And my last thing is with graduation. So if we've said that the senior students are like going to be doing their more specialised studies, I'm imagining at the graduation ceremonies, all the Ochre students have their like nice ceremonial cloak, which is maybe like a beautiful orange or something. The senior students have their deep blue cloak. But for the senior students that are graduating, like in their final year, they start off with a white cloak. And then when they walk up to get their certificate or their graduation, whatever it is, whatever they've specialized in, like whatever the subjects are more focused on, their cloak changes to the colors that correspond with their specialties. Ooh. And it's like a nice graduation magical effect. So like say there's a kid who's like, they specialized in like magizoology and like cooking or something. And the color for magizoology is like green and the cooking color is like orange. And so they get a cool, nice tie-dye effect on their graduation cloak. And then that's something that they can keep as like a little keepsake.
Okay. I wasn't thinking just colors. I was thinking more like a tapestry maybe.
Yeah. Even like art. Pictures.
Yeah.
Like, you
this-
know.
I don't know if this is good, maybe just for Indigenous students, but so Indigenous art, like the symbols tell stories, like there's a symbol that means kangaroo, there's a symbol that means meeting place, a symbol that means river. So like maybe like traditional Indigenous art that like tells the story of your schooling and the things you learned, the places you went to that particularly resonated with you, the teachers you spoke to, like a whole tapestry of your education from beginning to end.
I wonder if that's even, like, something that the students optional can do themselves. Like, so maybe a lot of the artistic students might be jumping on that. I even thought as well, like, for the kids that are specialising in visual arts, maybe, like, one of the projects they have to do is, like, design a bunch of these cloaks for a bunch of their classmates. And they all get given a certain amount of people.
Yeah, I like the idea of you either make or design your cloak yourself. Either you do it yourself or, like, you're taught the spells that will imbue the cloak with the things that you need it to do. And, like, you do it over the course of your schooling. You work on this cloak from when you join to when you graduate. So, like, you decide. Look, at this place we went to Cooper Pedy, that didn't really resonate with me. But when we went to Mount Warning, like, I loved it there. And I really felt like I was part of the place and part of the land. And I really vibe with this one teacher who was a ghost on the Shipwreck Coast. So I want to have, like, part of what they taught me as part of my cloak. That's sort of thing.
Like at the end of year 12 when everyone signs your shirt and, like, they write little in-jokes on it. But you're designing it yourself. So, I would imagine First Nations students who are, like, adept artists would have, like, traditional storytelling things. But then there'll be other students that have, like, you know, their own interpretations of stuff. And, like, maybe it's just a bunch of quotes. Maybe it's, like, a visual artist thing. Like, you know, it'd be great. That'd be cool. I like that a lot.
I love that a lot. That's really, really cool. That's maybe the coolest idea we've come up with.
Nice. Okashaw. Yeah, I love it. Subjects.
Okashaw. Right. So I definitely think we should split the subjects between junior and senior. Okay. And I think in junior years, all the subjects should be compulsory. And then in senior years, you can drop whatever you don't want to have.
Okay.
And maybe also in senior years, other subjects that are like advanced or extended versions of the things you learned in junior years open up.
Yeah, specification for stuff.
Yeah. So I think that was off the top of my head. Here's what I had in my notes. Care of Magical Creatures are core class because animals is such a hassle. I definitely think, like, nature and the environment is a core class.
Yeah, herbology, yeah.
Flying is a core class and apparition starts much earlier. I think maybe apparition starts as soon as you get into the senior school, so that would be 16.
Yep.
Actually, 16 is when it starts in Harry Potter as well.
No, let's start it at 13. Why not? Let's
start it at 13. Okay, cool.
So you get your, like, kindergarten year at age 12, and then as soon as you're a teenager, it's like, all right, time to learn how to pop into place.
Okay, and the idea is you will have mastered and gotten your apparition license before you get into the senior years.
Yeah.
Good, because that gives the senior years much more flexibility of movement as well, because they're integrating themselves into higher populated areas. Perfect. I like that. And then I had Indigenous studies. Yep. I think there will definitely be certain kinds of magic or kinds of teachers that are just for the Indigenous population. Mm-hmm. Like, secret business. It's just not to be shared with outsiders.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, that will just be part of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I had on core subjects. Do you have any more ideas there?
Oh, I had just all the general cores that we see at Hogwarts, like DADA, potions, herbology, care of magical creatures, charms. I had astronomy. I think astronomy is more important here than in the UK. Mm-hmm. I just want to do a quote here. This is from Dark Emu by Bruce Pascoe, which is a great book about Australian history and agriculture of Indigenous peoples.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, Biami, the creator spirit Emu, left the Earth after its creation to reside as a dark shape in the Milky Way. The Emu is inextricably linked with the wide grasslands of Australia, the landscape managed by Aboriginals. The fate of the Emu, people, and grain are locked in step, because for Aboriginal people, the economy and the spirit are inseparable. Europeans stare at the stars, but the Aboriginal people also see the spaces in between where the spirit Emu resides.
Ooh, that's amazing.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, obviously the stars are important, but there's also spaces around the stars that I think are included in the astronomy.
We see the lights above the Arby's, yeah. Stupid reference.
Transfiguration, history of magic, Australian, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Magical cultures, so I like to see this as like a mix between learning about First Nations practices and also like an international studies vibe. So we have this in our core classes in junior high school where it's like, oh, here's a bit about society and culture in India and China and like the countries, usually the countries that surround Australia. And you just sort of do a bit of that. So I think that'd be good. Muggle and studies.
I think Muggle studies is going to be a bigger thing in the senior years, and for the junior years, they won't really touch on it much because they're in much more remote areas. But everywhere they go, you're going to be learning the history and the geography of the place.
Yeah, I think also a big one, and this is a bit Australia focused, is magical trades and skills. So these would be cores like how we had to do the cores where it's like cooking, sewing, woodwork, metalwork. I think all these kids would be learning how to cook, clean, and even do things like carpentry and manipulating metals and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is important because in Australia there's a real culture here of like high school and schooling isn't for everyone. You can drop out before your senior years and like go into a trade or go into a skill, and like you'll still have half a high school, you'll have like a high school graduation. Like it's
So, you can choose to like graduate early in high school, basically. And something that was repeatedly told to us in high school was your final 2 years of high school, your senior years, the only reason to do those is if you're going on to university. If you don't want to go to university, drop out.
Yeah,
it's 100%. Pointless to stick around high school for an extra 2 years when everything that will be taught in the classes is basically a preparation to get you into university.
Yeah.
If you're not doing uni, don't do those years. Do something else. Go get a job. Go to a trade. Do something else.
Yeah. The last, like, core that I had was what I'm calling magical society. And this is, like, a mix of commerce, legal studies, economics, like, how the postal system works. And I think this will just be, like, sort of the essential understanding that the kids need to know, like, how a bill becomes a law and all that sort of stuff.
Okay.
Because
that's good.
There'll be kids that'll be like, oh, I want to work in the postal system, or I want to be a journalist, or I want to, like, you know, be a weatherman. And these are the kind of, like, this is the class that gives them that all-rounder view of this is how Australian Magical Society works.
That is incredibly useful for the Muggle studies, not the Muggle studies students, for the Muggle-born students.
Yeah.
Because, like, Harry Potter doesn't have any of that, and he just sort of gets thrown in the deep end and doesn't fucking know anything that's going on and has to have it explained to him by Ron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot to even mention healing should be that'll come.
Oh yeah, yeah. Healing.
That'll come in later, yeah.
Yeah, I think healing is one of those subjects that isn't part of the core curriculum in junior years, but in senior years it opens up as a new subject you can take.
Yeah.
Because it's a more specialized form of magic.
I have those down as electives. I can go into those now if you want.
Yeah, I think all the core classes are the junior classes and the electives are the senior classes.
Yeah.
And they get more complicated and more difficult as your schooling goes on, obviously.
Yeah. So some electives I had are alchemy, First Nation studies. Again, I think just like more extensive, more deep diving into like First Nations magical practices and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Culinary, I don't know why I had this specifically, like, so food.
Yeah. You were hungry when you wrote these notes.
arts, mm-hmm. agriculture or aquaculture as well, I guess. And
yeah.
I want to have, like, obviously, like, the botany, the magizoology, all that sort of stuff here as well.
Yeah.
Marine. So, like, marine magic and all that sort of stuff, and mm-hmm. marine magical zoology and magical biology.
Yeah, I like the idea that care of magical creatures when you're junior, and it wouldn't just be magical creatures, it would be, like, care and understanding of magical land and animals gets expanded out into, like, six separate subjects when you go into senior years.
Yeah. And then healing as well.
Mm-hmm. Healing would definitely be one. Those are the ones
I
had.
Astronomy, I guess you could learn more about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also, like you said, some sort of extension of the introduction to magical world subject that's like, this is a subject to do if you intend to end up working in magical government or magical media or...
Yeah.
Like...
Magical society.
Magical society, yeah. Like, these are the subjects to do preparing you for various different career paths and not necessarily the different schools of magic.
Yeah, they'll teach you how to be, like, a good administrator, how to be a good negotiator, how to understand budgets and all this sort of stuff. Like,
so if I want to work for the magical government, like, I will do these governing and, like, history subjects to sort of learn more about the country, but then I might also take, like, the botany and the culinary subjects just because I'm interested in plants and I love cooking. So those are the things that I want to specialize in for my magical development, but for my career development, I want to be a politician or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have, like, more, like, senior focus studies or electives or anything on your mind?
No, not really. I feel like we've covered a lot of this in, like, previous episodes on magical education. Healing, apparition, legimency and occlumency, that's something we always bring up.
Yeah.
Those sort of, like, mental cerebral magics would be covered in the senior years.
Mm. What about animagi? Do you reckon that's a subject you can take as a senior?
Yeah, I think... So I said, like, specializations when you get older, I think... Something like when I was in high school, I had the option to do certain major works, they were called.
Yeah.
And I did three because I was an insane person. I did three major works in different subjects. The first was a personal interest project, which was a like a social study that I had to do into a certain group or phenomenon in a subject called society and culture.
Yeah.
The next was a monologue that I had to perform for drama, and it was like a representation of a school of theatre. And then the third was an 8,000-word short story for an English subject, which could have also been a poem or an essay or something, but I chose to do a short story. So those were like major works that I did to be like, here are the culmination of 6 years' worth of education in this subject.
Yeah.
Something like that for like a personal interest project for transfiguration might be learning to become an animagus.
Yeah, definitely.
But
like a personal interest project for something like magical botany might be like, I'm going to grow and nurture this extremely rare plant that needs very specific, you know, things to make sure it doesn't die.
Yeah.
Things like
or
that.
Or for like magical woodworking or whatever, it's like, I'm going to create a magical staff which can be used to do certain things like that. It's basically like... This is an area of study and of magic that I'm very interested in. I want to show everything that I've learned in the past, however many years I've been educating myself in this subject, and also push my studies above and beyond what is offered by the school with the guidance and support of my teachers. I'm like, it's like a thesis, basically. It's like I'm moving into a new area and doing something unique and special that requires a lot of time and effort. I think those things are open to the higher years.
That'd be amazing. Like, imagine, like, the senior magical students, like, there'll be, like, one night where it's, like, a feast night, where, like, the couple of students that are interested in, like, culinary and food are, like, making exquisite, like, meals that are, like, their passion projects. And then, like, you could walk through, like, the bush walk that's designed where it's, like, all the herbology students have created amazing exhibits on these, like, trees and plants. Or, like... there'd be a music night for the students that are like creating incredible like musical experiences and stuff. Like, it'd be insane. It'd be great stuff.
Yeah. Sounds fantastic. I'm thinking of like the things, the works that were created in our high school by like the woodworking and metalworking departments, like the chairs and stuff that they would create.
Mm.
Like, imagine spending an entire year creating just one chair. That's, like, what certain students did. And they were amazing. They were incredible. They were set up, like, museum exhibits. You could go and see all the artwork, especially by the design and art students.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember Sarah's series of portraits that she did?
Yeah, gorgeous.
Exquisite. They were incredible.
I also had some extracurriculars. So, like, these are, like, school clubs and things that you can also do. Sports. Just lots of sporting clubs.
All the way through. Sports in every year.
Every single sport you can imagine. Lots of arts clubs, music, dance, theatre. Creature clubs, botany clubs, bushcraft. Cultural clubs like a First Nations society, Chinese society, etc.
Yeah, all the nerd shit, chess clubs and gobstones clubs and reading clubs, all that bullshit.
Study debate clubs.
Club, yeah. Study groups, yeah.
Leadership and community groups, which I think would be, like, called altogether, like, mateship clubs. So it'd be, like, you know, like, volunteering and, like, student representative council, being a prefect, things like that. Like,
yeah. I think we have, they might not even be called prefects, but, like, school leaders or school captains or house leaders. I think house leaders and school captains is a thing. And we would have, because they're split into juniors and seniors as well, we would have heaps of them.
Yeah. I can definitely see all of that.
So I had, as an extracurricular, because like I had all this as well, sports, arts, blah, blah, blah. An extracurricular for, I guess, the junior school is flying around at night specifically to scare muggles. Have you heard of the Min Min lights?
No.
Okay. So this is a real phenomenon in Australia, in outback Australia, specifically in Queensland and New South Wales. People will go out into the outback at night and see basically lights in the sky, and they move in certain patterns and through certain places. It's often cited as a UFO phenomena, but we have records from the indigenous people seeing them predating colonization.
Wow.
So the Min Min lights are like a thing you can go and see in the sky at night, and I think it's very funny if it's wizards flying around on their brooms like 12-year-olds scaring people.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah
I can also see just a bunch of, like unofficial school clubs forming.
Yeah.
Like, the Bunyip Wish Club. The kids that keep going to the same billabong and leaving, like, messages there in bottles to get a Bunyip Wish.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff.
I don't think that's a club. I think that's just a thing people do. Extracurriculars, I'm just covering, like, stuff that the students do. Like, I don't think the Min Min Lights is a club. I think it's just a thing that they do.
Yeah.
It's like a rite of passage.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if this is a thing for other countries, but we have Muck Up Day.
Oh, yeah.
So, Muck Up Day is the final day of your schooling, where you show up in usually costumes, sometimes themes have been decided on, and you don't go to any classes, and you basically just spend the entire day mucking around, and sometimes disrupting and annoying the other classes and the other students, but mostly just fucking around and having a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah, kidnapping students and glad wrapping them to a pole is a popular Muck Up Day activity.
Vegemite on the stairway rails and
pranking the school. Toilets.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, pranking the school, blowing bubbles everywhere, like all kinds of just silly, stupid activities. For my Muck Up Day, well, first of all, mine was shut down by the school and then it was not allowed anymore because of various terrible things that happened.
Yeah.
But before it was shut down, in like the first half an hour when we were enjoying ourselves, I modified my school uniform because I didn't need to wear it anymore. I took one and cut it up into shreds, basically, and used it to modify a different school uniform into a clown outfit.
Yeah.
And wore that and had a lot of fun running around.
Yeah. Ours was also shut down early because they were, like, super, like, they didn't want any muck-up days because they were, like, of what you guys did.
My year was the final muck-up day because, effectively, someone took it too far and then the school shut it down and they weren't allowed anymore.
Yeah.
That was very sad and upset. And it was because of one disgruntled student, basically, who ruined it for everyone.
So, like, our year was, like, restricted to the back oval. We weren't allowed to set foot in the school. Even people trying to use the bathrooms were, like, screamed at.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were pissed because of what happened our year. It was, like, a whole thing.
So then, like, there was one point during the day where everyone's like, oh, we should just march in the school. And I'm like, bye, because I didn't want to lose my HSC. I didn't want to lose my high school certificate.
Yeah.
So I drove away and I went and had fish and chips somewhere else. Anyway. Yeah.
Should I just tell this story? Because I feel like it's teasing the audience if I don't just explain what happened.
Eh, if you want to.
I'll just say, it's just a quick story. Basically what happened is in the final week of school, there was a certain student who was a fuckwit who we all hated, and he brought a knife to school because he thought that was a cool and fun thing to do and not stupid. And the teachers found him with his knife, and he was immediately on the spot expelled because you can't bring weapons to school. So he was expelled, and because it was the final week of the final year of school, basically that meant that he couldn't graduate. He couldn't do his high school certificates, and he couldn't get into university because he didn't have those final results. And because it happened that final week, he wasn't able to enroll in another school in enough time to do his exams. Yeah. So he basically just flailed school in like the final week. And I don't know if he eventually enrolled somewhere else the next year or whatever, but either way, it was a huge thing and it cost him a whole year of his life. And because he was deeply, deeply furious about being kicked out of school, he showed up in the middle of the night the day before mock-up day, broke into the school, and first of all, broke a bunch of shit, broke a bunch of windows and, like, trashed the school. But he also got a spray can and painted, let's say, violent and sexually explicit graffiti about the members of the school who had expelled him, so notably the principal, the vice principal, the other vice principal, all over the massive quadrangle in the main school. So like, it was the first thing you saw when you walked into school, these massive, huge, explicit things. And our entire school got blamed for, our entire year got blamed for it, the actions of one person who wasn't even there. He wasn't even part of Muck Up Day because he wasn't part of the school anymore. But of course they didn't care and they didn't want to hear it. And like, people in my year like took the pressure washer and like tried to get rid of this stuff. Like, we were really trying to, you know, make it right because we didn't really, like, none of us vibed with what was going on. But we got pulled into a hall and screamed at by the teachers, and it was a whole thing. And we got the muck up day was shut down, and we were kicked out without the first hour. It was a whole miserable thing. Anyway, it's not a fun story, but I thought I've mentioned it too much to not explain it, so let's just cover it and move on.
Yeah, and the ripples of that were still felt 4 years later with my year.
4 years later. Yeah, that school doesn't do muck up day anymore because of one student who ruined it for everyone.
Yeah.
So, but I think Muck Up Day as a school is a thing for the Orcas.
Yeah, and it would be insane because of all the magic and...
Because of all the magic. It's like Fred and George Weasley being like, we're done. Fireworks, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Because the spirit behind it is like, this school has absolutely no power over me anymore, so I can do all of the silly, insane things that I wasn't able to do while I was attending. So it's a day for pranks and mischief and acting like a lunatic.
Yeah. Larrikin.
Yeah, larrikin behaviour. Another time-honoured tradition of Australian schooling is something called schoolies.
Oh, God, yeah.
Schoolies is a massive party that doesn't happen at school. It happens on the Gold Coast, which is a touristy area full of bars and clubs, where basically every single student in Australia, especially along the eastern coast, I don't know if people come over the way from Western Australia, but I wouldn't be surprised. Basically all travel to the Gold Coast and party after school has closed down. After the end of year exams are done and before Christmas, there's like several weeks worth of parties.
Yeah.
And it's called schoolies, and you are a schoolie when you attend for your year, you're a foolie when you are too young and you attend the older years, and you're a toolie when you're too old and you continue to go to schoolies even though you shouldn't still be going.
Yeah. As people who grew up in that sort of part of the world or near it, it was a constant menace every year. We're like, oh, schoolies again.
Every
like,
year. Schoolies again. It was also a menace to, like, me specifically because my birthday is right at the end of the year. Like, I was one of a handful of people who couldn't participate in schoolies because I wasn't 18.
Yeah.
My schoolies year. So it was very annoying and upsetting and I never got to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, magical schoolies, like, I don't know if it would happen along the Gold Coast with all the muggles. No, no. It might.
I mean,
but I think they would just have their own version.
They might. Like, I reckon there's, like, you know, you either go along with the muggles to the Gold Coast, or there's, like, a magical one where they all go out in the middle of nowhere and just fuck around and, yeah.
Yeah.
Classic.
Good times.
School motto.
School motto. We've landed here. A couple of episodes ago, you, as a joke, threw out a school motto, Primus Cuntus.
Yeah.
I looked that up because I'm like, what if she's landed on it? What if it's perfect? But in Latin, that translates to first count, which I don't think is a very good school motto.
I'm just going to give a major, like, corny warning. because I couldn't think of anything good. Like, a lot of school mottos in Australia are just, like, random sports values put together. Yeah. Like, courage and strength. Like, like, you know, wisdom and teamsmanship or something. It's just determination. A bunch of bullshit. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, ours was some sort of variation on, like, try. Try your best was our high school motto. Then I can't think of what my university's motto was. I think it was just, like, something like excellence and achievement or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's all that sort of stuff.
Some bullshit.
I was trying to think of something, and I was like, our leaders are learned, but that sounds gross and wanky. Mm. Community is strength, I thought might be interesting, because of, like, you know, you travel around, you see all these different parts of Australia.
Yeah, I like that. I was thinking maybe because we're traveling around, like maybe something about learning as a journey or something like that, or journey to learn, something like that.
Journey to learn sounds good. I had always growing. Journey to learn sounds better though. And then I had my last one, which was sort of dumb but silly but also cute. Mateship, stay afloat.
I like something incorporating mateship. I was also thinking, I didn't have any ideas for this before we came into it because I knew we'd find it in the episode. The cloak idea that is like the story of your entire education. So maybe something of like, the story of learning, learning through story, learning through time, something like that.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, something like that.
So maybe, yeah. What was the other one that I said that was good?
Journey to learn. Or
Journey to learn. Yeah. Or so like, maybe something like story, journey, learning, something like that. Just combining those ideas.
Yeah. That's sort of the vibe.
Yeah, remember that Hogwarts' motto is never tickle a sleeping dragon as well, which has nothing to do with education.
Well, it's just good advice.
Just good advice. Just remember, come here for 7 years worth of schooling and also this one piece of advice.
There, that's everything I have on Oakeshaw Academy.
Oakeshaw Academy. I love it. I think we made a really cool school.
Yeah, I would actually want to go.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I probably wouldn't wag that much if I went to Oakeshaw Academy.
Hang out with the Condors, the Bullocks, the Murrays, and the Goliaths. And remember that learning is a journey, the motto of our school.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Learning is a journey is such a fucking lame motto, but it's very cool when combined with the fact that for the school you actually do journey around and learn.
Yeah, you go on a somewhat pilgrimage around the country.
Yeah. For what, 6 years?
Yeah, 7 years, yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff. I don't know what to say. It's kind of shocking because, like you said, this is our last, like, content episode. So yeah, I guess that's Harry Potter.
That's Harry Potter. We did it.
We did it.
We set out... Look, this is the sort of stuff that we should be talking about in next episode when we wrap up the entire series. Yeah. But let's just wrap up the Australian magical stuff at the moment.
Yes, okay. Let's
do definitely that. No one has gone into magical Australia in this level of depth.
And no one ever will again.
Who would want to? Remember us when JK publishes her inevitable magic wank about Australia. Every time you see someone tweeting about it, you just drop a link into this series and be like, no.
Yeah.
Every time that's your mission, listeners.
Every time you see someone say something very culturally insensitive and dumb about how, like, all magic users are using didgeridoos to cast spells or something of that nature, or the magical school is in a hollowed out Uluru, you can just think back on this. Or, I don't know, just do some research into the history of this country and the cultures that exist here.
It's no, just... you don't have to do that. You don't have to think or research. Oh, yeah. We did it for you.
We did
drop
it.
Drop the link.
Yeah, footnote, cite us. Yeah, I do look forward to see what JK will inevitably say, because I know it's just going to be a fucking travesty. So. Yeah. But hey, we beat her to it, so go fuck yourself, JK Rowling. We've already done it.
Yeah.
You can't say anything that isn't like, oh, she copied that of us. Or, oh, she's so fucking stupid for saying that. So,
yeah.
Primus Cuntus.
That. Oh my god. Primus Cuntus first count. We got here first, bitch. We did it. We colonized magical Australia. Now it's ours. absolutely the goal of the series was always to get all of our ideas out before JK could. Now they're our ideas. Now she's copying us. Now we can sue her.
That was the goal of this entire 6-year journey, to sue JK Rowling for copyright. When she could have done that to us a billion times over.
Yeah. 126 or however many episodes we end up landing on times over.
Well, I've been Jem, and congratulations on graduating wizard school.
I've been Rhea, Primus Contest.
Thanks for listening. If you want to support us or get in touch, the links to our social media and Patreon are in the show notes. Please feel free to send us so many messages that we go mad and run away to a hut on a rock in the middle of the sea just to avoid them. You'll hear from us again in 2 weeks' time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.